You're listening to the Canned Air Podcast, your sidekick in the quest for knowledge, power, and entertainment. So strap yourselves in and prepare for victory!
Everyone, and welcome to another episode of Canned Air, your tribute to comics and pop culture. I'm Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
I'm Jake Runyon.
I'm Abby Potter.
And joining us today, we have television and comic book writer and also fellow podcaster John Ward joins us today. Thanks for being with us, John.
Thank you for having me, guys.
We got a good show lined up for you today in our retro roundtable. We're going to be talking about the Jurassic Park franchise. It's about damn time.
I would think so.
With Fallen Kingdom right around the corner, I think it's time we
ready to take us
dinosaurs.
All through a journey of disappointment.
Yes,
purpose, evil, greed.
Yes, as much as I hate to admit,
hey, it's going to suck, but we're going to have fun talking about it. Yep. That's what matters.
I'm still going to go see it.
Oh yeah, it's already got my money.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Then in the comic vault, what do we have to talk about, guys?
You heard of Watchmen?
Legacy Control.
Sorry, you fucked me up.
I'm sorry. Legacy Control.
Yeah, and it's nothing. Well, and of course, it's probably going to be nothing that you would think it is because it's totally not what you think it is.
Okay,
I don't know what you might think it is, but it's not that.
I've just disregarded what I thought it was, so I can't even answer.
Just throw it away.
Okay, fair enough. One of the books we'll be talking about there, and then we're going to turn our full attention over to John and talk about the comic Scratcher, which looks to be pretty damn
cool.
Mm-hmm. Pretty damn cool. So, before we do all that, Jake.
It's that time, everybody, where I tell you, even though my body is in open rebellion, my nasal passages are fighting me every breath, go to Twitter. Follow us, retweet, please, while I still have time on this earth. We are at Canned Air Pod, and on Instagram we are at @canned_air. I pour my heart out into those tweets for you, wrestling with character limits, finding new material. The least you can do is, you know, follow the show or something. Also, we're on Patreon, so if you like what we do, throw a couple of bucks a month our way, hit that $5 mark or more, and you have access to the Patreon-exclusive Founders Club podcast.
They kind of owe us, right?
I think so.
That was a joke. You don't. But give us some
budget. Come on, budget.
Yeah. And what else we got? Just really quick before we go on, a big thanks to everyone who put on the Columbus Podcast Festival this past, what was it, May? What were the dates?
9th through the 12th?
Oh, I have a calendar. Okay, that'll work.
Sorcery.
10th through the 13th. Pardon me. But, yeah, we had our show on the Saturday, the 12th, and it was a lot of fun.
It was.
Yep.
I couldn't believe how well we did. I thought I did great. So, not to sound conceited or anything, but we just got
We were amazing.
We're better than everyone.
I thought for a minute we would get up there and just start, you know, you know.
I can't do this,
and they just run off stage or something. But, no, boy, I was really proud of us. Mm-hmm. So,
well, the tablecloth made it hard for everyone to see that my legs were shaking, so that's cool.
Or our balls.
That's why I didn't wear shorts. I'm like, you know what? They need to pay a little extra for that guy.
Right.
We'll just leave the one out on the one pant leg. So.
Yeah, there you go. But we have the audio and video of that, so we're going to be releasing that as an episode. I'm not sure exactly when yet, but fairly soon, and Jack's going to be putting that up on YouTube.
It should be up by this weekend.
There we go. Awesome. I can't wait to see it. Well, let's just kick it off with this week's Retro Roundtable.
I am prepared to blast from the mic.
Cowabunga!
What have we to come up? That's like
dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs, indeed. We're going to be talking about the Jurassic franchise, like I said, because of Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom coming out, which looks like it's probably going to be a little bit of a hot mess, but the first Jurassic Park has got to be my all-time favorite movie. I think it probably always will be. Nothing's come in and beat it yet, so
I feel like I can always re-watch that one. I can't rewatch like 2 and 3, but like
the first one, if it's on, I watch it.
I can't even watch it the other day. Let alone rewatch.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard.
Glad I never watched 3 or 2, I think.
I think I watched like 5 minutes of it, and I was like, I'm going to watch SpongeBob.
What about you, John?
I'm with you. I'm a big fan of the first one. I actually liked the last one too. It was a lot of fun. I'm not sure like I would watch it too many times. It's not. I don't think it's a movie I can keep coming back to.
Are you talking about the first one. Third one, or are you talking about Jurassic World?
Jurassic World. Yeah, that's the one I meant.
Now that one was fantastic.
Yeah, I liked that one.
I loved that movie. And I think what made that, and I think it broke some box office records, maybe that Avengers have, like, now probably beat them. But
yeah, I think so.
Yeah, they had set some records at the time. And I think what really made that movie work, at least for me, is the fact that you were getting to see, after all these years, the park open and functioning.
That was the best part. The promise of that was and Chris everything.
Pratt's sweaty, bulging biceps. No doubt.
That definitely helped.
But yeah, seeing the park open and running and looking to be somewhat successful there for a short time before all hell breaks loose. But yeah, I think this next one, and I've heard other people say this, so I'm not saying anything prolific, but it's just a rehash of The Lost World.
Right. It's, what's the point?
Yeah, I guess we have to wait and see, though, because it's kind of tricky to tell from the trailers alone. And, you know, so I will give it the benefit of the doubt. I do think that, you know, I would have liked to see, you know, a whole park full of kind of like giant Jeff Goldblums, maybe. I think that could have been an interesting way to go.
I would move into the theater.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll have redeeming qualities because Jeff Goldblum's in this one.
I would like to think so, but the little clip I've seen of him, he looks kind of senile, like he's kind of playing a senile Malcolm, like he's...
Oh, that's a bummer.
I mean, I could be wrong, but he's just like sitting in a court staring straight ahead like, it's going to become a Jurassic World. It's going to happen. Nature finds a way.
You know, PTSD like, from the first time around.
Well, yeah, but these fuckers keep going back for some reason.
In the middle of having a stroke in the court or something. Dinosaurs all smell like almonds. I don't understand.
Apartments.com.
I absolutely love Jeff Goldblum. Oh, he was great as the Grand Master in Thor Ragnarok.
He was awesome.
Yeah.
But, I'm excited he's going to be back. And yeah, I think that was, they kind of brought him back to maybe help lure some people back. Mm-hmm. Look, an original cast member.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it worked.
Except for Dr.
B.D. Wong's character. I can't remember his name, but he was in the first one, too.
Yeah.
Was he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's OG. He's like a villain now.
Yeah, he's turned into a dick. I keep wanting to say Hannibal Chow. That's Ron Perlman from Pacific Rim. So.
No, as soon as we are done recording, it'll hit me like a ton of bricks.
Yeah, that's how it goes.
Damn it. Anyway, I was going to go around the table asking what our favorites were, but I think it's quite obvious Jurassic Park and Jurassic World are the favorites here.
I was going to say, what do you think is it that about like Lost World though that doesn't work for you guys?
The concept. Now, this is, I mean, what worked for me was the concept of people coming in trying to get these dinosaurs, take them off the island. I mean, that would totally happen. It just seemed like less practical effect and more computer animated graphics, which. I don't know. At the time, it's not like they looked bad, but you can definitely tell. And it doesn't hold a candle to the first movie that had, you know, the full... That T-Rex was a puppet.
Yeah. Mm.
And,
yeah.
You know, even beyond that, I think there's this hard-to-define quality that a lot of sequels have where, like, you remember the first time you tried your favorite flavor of ice cream, you're like, oh, my whole world is different now.
Right.
This is incredible. And you go back next week to get the same thing, you're like, yeah, it is. It's good. You know, it's just having so much of a good thing. Even if the sequel is solid, you're still just like, yeah,
sure.
The best way I can describe my feelings towards it is kind of like when you watch like a Disney princess like sequel that looks like straight to DVD or something like that. It's just like, it's still okay, but you're just like, it's not. They didn't put as much effort.
It's trying to capture lightning in a bottle again.
Yeah.
It's usually full of the same one-liners and little quirks and stuff that they just repeat over and over. Mm-hmm.
I almost wonder if it's not even their fault. If that's just the nature of sequels. You know,
I think it is.
And you know, I gotta say, I think the best sequel of all time is Aliens, because it was a genre switch.
Yeah.
Alien was this tense, cramped survival horror experience. Aliens was an action movie.
Yeah.
You know, and it totally fucking worked.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what you need to avoid that slump, is you need to pivot. You need to take a familiar setting and introduce unfamiliar events.
Right, and that was a big problem with the Child's Play movies. You know, the first three movies
it's
were
only so much you can do
horror films, you know, and though they looked ridiculous, you were still coming at it from the victim's perspective, and you didn't get a full reveal of the doll until later in the movie, where they then switched to comedic, you know, horror comedy, and you're riding along with the dolls, and it doesn't work. It does not work.
Freddy kind of did that, too. He always had a little bit of jokes here and there, but it wasn't as serious as they went on.
It worked so well for Freddy at first, and then they leaned into it too hard.
You know? Some of his jokes are just priceless in those first movies. They just, to this day, catch me out. What else we got here?
You know, you mentioned the seeing Hammond's vision realized.
Yeah.
That was what brought me into the theater for Jurassic World.
Yeah.
It was like, I had a friend who said, like, he always has more fun watching Jurassic Park before the dinosaurs start killing people.
Right.
Because you see that world and you're like, oh my God, I want to be a part of this. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think in Jurassic World they did a good job, maybe with the exception of their magical all-terrain hamster balls, they did a pretty good job presenting it, in a way that makes sense from, like, a modern world business standpoint.
Sure.
I know it was, like, just a shitty corporate tie-in, but seeing the Margaritaville there...
Yeah.
There would be a Margaritaville at Jurassic
Did
World.
Did you see what else was there?
The Messiah.
Your boy.
Mr. James Buffett himself.
Running to make sure he didn't spill his margarita.
Because he's got his priorities in order.
I think he had two.
He like, sure did.
Guy. Did he?
Yeah.
He knew he was going to be held up a while.
Mm-hmm. And I tell you what, that I don't know the names of any of these creatures, so I apologize. But that gigantic ocean-bound apex predator thing... Eating, what was that, like a great white shark?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
The most illegal, horrible thing you can feed to another bigger monster. But I love that.
Yeah,
that
it was just, sweet.
That was the kind of spectacle I would have given anything to see. So seeing that sort of thing, I was like, all right. Even if I don't like the second half, I know I'm going to be down for the first half of this movie.
And the Jurassic World theme park could be responsible for the extinction of the great white.
Oh,
because
sure.
Think of how many shows a day they have.
Yeah.
Oh, geez, yeah.
You know, if you put the great white out there every time.
And then their facility breaks down, that thing gets loose, and nothing's ever the same.
So there goes the ocean.
Well, that picture of, that shot in the trailer with the wave, the surfers on the wave, and you see that thing riding through the wave. Oh my God, that looked creepy, but...
Yeah, so that thing does get out then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it looks like everything comes to mainland. It's just, I'm not buying the trailer. It's like... Remember the vault, the island that we narrowly escaped with our lives? Yeah. Let's go back to save a bunch of shit that's going to try to kill us again.
Yeah.
On an island that's about to blow up beneath our feet. Okay.
It's like, Blue still remembers you. She doesn't.
No.
That whole thing about the whole team up with Blue is what is super killed it for me. I was like, come on. Yeah. Really? We're going to
turning it into
friend adventure?
I was able to roll with what happened at the end of Jurassic World, how, like, you know, in that moment... He didn't attack,
sure.
But to leave and then come back and have him just, like, come up like a puppy and, like, rubbing on him and shit. And,
what's
not that
the
I saw that,
movie with Tom? It was, like, Turner and Hooch or something?
Yeah.
They're trying to make it into, like, a buddy cop dog movie.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
I'll probably watch that, though.
Oh, man. Turner
Chris
and Hooch.
Pratt riding around on a raptor, kind of solving crimes. I think that'd be pretty cool.
That'd be amazing.
It'd
be a lot better than whatever
that.
We're gonna get.
That'd be hilarious if they announce that raptor in the movie.
Oh, dude, do you think?
I hope so.
I don't know.
Then he jousts a T-Rex with a tree.
I can't imagine. I would kill to see it.
But. At the same time, I have a, like, just hearing that, like, that fits what I'm assuming is going
to
happen in this movie.
it's not so far-fetched.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to DVD, you see Chris Pratt riding on a fucking green-screened ostrich or some shit. An ostrich in a green suit.
Oh, boy.
Or he's just, like, on his buddy's back, like, let's get out.
Right.
Holding a machine gun in one hand, a flag in the other.
Oh, God.
In the theater, I'll just yell, America!
Oh, my God. Let's see. What else? What about video games? Jurassic Park video games?
I think I tried playing the one for the second movie, and I didn't get very far. I was just like, this is trash.
Take
it back to the store.
I feel like maybe there was a time we spent a long while talking about Trespasser.
Mm. Oh, yeah, we did, because we had Derek Davis on the show.
Yeah,
He took that game and took all the, was it John Attenborough?
Yes.
Yes. He took all his clips, which were his memoirs of before the park and like how he acquired the island, how he got the funding, and up to breeding that first raptor, and took all that audio and made an hour and a half long thing called Jurassic, what was it, Time,
yeah.
Yeah, the memoirs of John Parker Hammond, and it's for free on the website you can go to. We'll have to link
it. It's incredible, yeah.
I can't remember off the top of my head, and it's also on YouTube, but yeah, it's all free, and it's
like about his son finding the memoirs and him after listening to it.
Yeah.
What it's really good.
It's beautiful, really good. Wonderful misfire that game was. That just had so much about it that's incredible still.
I still want to find the remastered that people are working on it.
Yeah?
Yeah. Oh,
dude, I'll be there when it happens.
Yeah.
And what Derek did, I mean, I think outshines what the game, legacy that ever was left. So, I don't know. I strongly recommend checking it out. It's really cool. Good listen.
Has anyone actually read the original book?
Yes. No, I haven't, and I'm ashamed because I love me some
Read? Okay.
It's so good.
Yeah, I have never read it, so I was just thinking about it. Maybe I should, sort of go back to the source material.
The first book is pretty much all the first three movies. Like, they tore the book apart to make all those movies.
They pulled a Hobbit way back before that was even a thing.
Yeah, like the big bird aviary.
Oh, yeah.
Like that.
That was the coolest part of that movie. Was the aviary structure. I was like, what? That's awesome. Oh, it's an enclosure for pteranodons or whatever the hell.
There's like a whole scene where Alan and the kids, they get in a dinghy and push themselves out into the middle of this body of water to escape a T-Rex. And the T-Rex just straight goes in the water and starts swimming after them. And then so they get going downstream. And like the whole book, this thing is chasing them like along the banks of this river. It's like relentless, never lets up.
I actually read a fact about that earlier. That scene and whatever scene with like a pterodactyl in like the third movie was supposed to happen in the first movie.
Yes.
But they decided to cut it. It was a deleted scene. They're like, well, let's just reuse it. And they just did the same thing in the third.
Well, there was a whole pterodactyl dive bomb scene that they had to run out of the field. But one of my favorite things about it was they couldn't find the raptors. They couldn't find the raptors anywhere. And spoilers, anyway, this has been out for a minute. I was in sixth grade, I think, when it came out, so you've had your time, people. They couldn't find the raptors or where they were breeding, and they eventually found them all underground. And the weirdest thing that they couldn't explain was that at certain times of the day, or they would see the raptors all standing perfectly still, facing the exact same direction. And they couldn't figure it out. Then they'd see a bunch of them on the beach doing the same thing, just standing still, all the same direction. Turns out, because they're relative to the bird,
they
were wanting to migrate.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
They couldn't. They were on an island,
So that instinct is just kind of misfiring, and they're like, this feels right.
This is close enough.
Such a good book.
Yeah. Now, I was told, like I said, I hadn't read the book, but I was told at one point they addressed, like, the velociraptor discrepancy, where, like, actual velociraptors were little turkey-sized, colorful bastards.
They did say something about that. I don't remember exactly, but
I thought it was something.
Basically that.
Yeah, that it was like a colloquialism at that point. They were really like Utah raptor or something, but like they were going to call them velociraptors because it's a tourist industry.
Sure.
It's not scary enough if they just look like little weird turkeys running around.
Yeah.
That's not a velociraptor.
Dude. I know that little one with the frills on his neck was. Well, I guess he was kind of cute until the frills came out.
The Dilophosaurus?
Yeah.
Apparently, like, in the book, he didn't have, like, the frills or anything. It was just made, like, just that spitting acid.
That thing. I don't remember.
Oh, it's, like, the one, like, with that fat tech guy.
Dennis Nedry. I mean, I know the scene you're talking about. I don't remember in the book him not saying that his thing didn't come up.
Yeah, I think it just said, like, that it had, like, the spitting acid. Steven Spielberg is the one who made the frills and the sound on his
really?
Neck.
So that thing was never a real thing?
No.
Yeah, actually, the actual dinosaur doesn't have either of those traits.
Really?
Yeah.
It's just a little dinky.
Been lied to.
It's just kind of hanging out there. It's not cool enough.
It's an awesome concept, though.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Did you guys learn in school that Stegosaurus had two brains?
No.
I feel like I did know that, actually. Yeah.
That was awesome.
They're both like pea size, though, right?
One in his head and then one in its tail.
Well, that was a theory they were running with for a while, but they've disproved it since
then. Yeah, I remember looking into that a while ago, and I was like, well, they changed their mind.
Which is weird because they quote that in Pacific Rim. It's like, Kaiju have two brains, like a dinosaur. I'm like, who fucking... I tell you what I did learn when I was in fifth grade. I learned that all the dinosaurs that didn't go onto Noah's Ark died in the flood.
Okay. Yeah.
That was a book. Yeah. Didn't tell you anything about dinosaurs.
So that's the real extinction. That's what really happened. I see.
Floodwaters.
Hmm.
Dang it, Noah.
I mean, if you put a T-Rex and raptors on your ark, they're going to eat everything else, right?
Yeah, well,
yeah. I think Brontosaurus is, they took that name away.
Oh, yeah. So it was a misidentification.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah.
It's funny, too. Hollywood's take on the dinosaur, I guess, before the Jurassic movies came along, I guess there really wasn't one. I mean... Jurassic Park kind of solidified what the modern dinosaur looks like to us. I mean, I guess not a modern dinosaur, but you know what I mean.
I know what you're after. The pop culture perception of the dinosaur.
Thank you.
Yeah, all the way up until Jurassic Park came out, dinosaurs dragged their tails when they walked.
Yeah, like doing the T-Rex, like almost like completely upright.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking, Land That Time Forgot was pretty much the only movie I remember kind of pre-Jurassic Park that actually had dinosaurs in it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love Land Before Time.
Oh, Land of the Lost, too. Yeah.
Land of the
80s show.
Was that the same thing? Is the Land Before Time and the one that he mentioned?
No, it's a different thing. But
I heard what, weird.
No, I heard the same thing. Oh, okay. I heard Land Before Time, too, but then I was like, wait, he didn't say that. What's the movie you're speaking of?
I think that, I don't know, it's if it was Land That Time Forgot or something. I don't know. Maybe
that's the old black and white movie.
It's got the claymation stop motion.
Yeah.
Kind of. Oh, the old one.
You always see the Tyrannosaurus biting the Stegosaurus. They're just
sitting. I thought that was called Lost World. Is that not right?
Mm-mm. No, that's a Land Time Forgot.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about Land of the Lost?
Yes.
I watched the one in the 90s, I remember.
The Will Ferrell movie?
No. No, there's a Saturday morning show in the 90s that there was one before that also.
Way before that with really bad special effects.
Yeah. I don't remember many dinosaurs in that one except for like the one they took on as a pet that was just like no dinosaur we know, just like some little person in a suit. You know?
It was like Gadzooki pretty much.
Yeah.
Oh man, Gadzooki. What a concept. I tell you what, that series had its moments.
Yeah.
Just, you know, it was my easiest way to access the whole Godzilla roster of enemies.
Right. Just blow smoke rings.
Yeah. Oh man.
So that was the baby Godzilla that ran around with the human characters, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Because he surely can't be running around with a building tall monster, right? Well. What else we got? Jurassic Park. Anybody?
Has anyone got any dinosaurs that they'd love to see in Jurassic Kingdom?
Ooh. Ooh, boy. I hadn't thought about that. I would love to see, and I guess we kind of did in Lost World, but you never see much action out of a Triceratops. I would like to see a couple Triceratops like fighting or something
I'd like to see a Triceratops come out on top in a fight.
Like two bulls like going against each other.
Yeah. I'd like to see it gore a different dinosaur.
True.
That'd be cool.
Or do they have the you know the one I always liked when I was younger? I think it's called like Pachycephalosaurus.
With the dome?
Yeah, they've got the big Friar Tuck tauncher.
Yes.
It's just super hard bone that they ram the hell out of shit. Yeah.
Every time they encounter something new, they smash it with their head first just to see what it's about.
What about you, John?
I don't know. That's a good question. I was thinking maybe those, what I think they're called titanosaurs, those like super massive sauropods from South America. They lived in a different era, though, unfortunately, so I don't really know if they could do it. But I think that'd be pretty cool to see like just massive, super giant versions of like a Brachiosaurus kind of thing. I think that'd be pretty interesting.
That would be amazing. Just the sheer power and magnitude. Yeah. It reminds me, like years back, we went to the Wright Pat Air Force Museum. That's not, you know, maybe a couple hours from here. And one of the big hangars on almost the entire ceiling is a deflated blimp. I don't know, used in war. I don't remember what war it was used in, but the thing of this, the size of this thing is so massive that just being under it was frightening for me. Like I was almost in a constant panic attack being under this thing because I thought, the sheer size of that could just squish me like an ant.
The first time I saw that when I was a kid, it gave me a complex that sticks with me to this day.
Exactly.
I am deeply terrified of things that are overwhelmingly huge.
I'm glad I'm not alone.
I have nightmares about it constantly. Like, anytime I have a dream that really shakes me up, it's I have been small in the face of something colossal.
You couldn't stop looking at it. No, it's like, how can people make something that fucking big?
Yeah.
I would just be too afraid to even work on it. I'd be like, it's gonna hurt
me
somehow.
You guys handle this one.
So to see something of that same magnitude that's actually a living, breathing creature,
I would die right there.
Yeah, so you win.
As beautiful as it would be, I'd have to take in the beauty as I ran away from it.
Oh yeah,
from like 50 miles away,
binoculars.
In Jurassic World, the thing that jumps out of the water, you get the magnitude. You get to kind of see exactly
that was my second choice. If it weren't for that already being in Jurassic World, I love the gigantic ocean predators.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'd have to sit in the splash zone of that show because I would certainly piss my pants.
Oh, dude.
Certainly.
I'm rinsed off now. Thank you.
No one will ever know. I remember reading something. It's like someone gets swallowed up by that thing in Jurassic World.
Mm-hmm.
And
the assistant.
Yeah, yeah. And I read some kind of thing. It was after the fact. They said that particular creature, I forget its name, had like a subset of jaws behind its teeth.
I can see that.
Like, yeah, the initial row of teeth. It wasn't like a shark where they went all the way back. It was like a ring of teeth, so they could tear out a chunk, almost like an alligator, and then it would be ground down by like the subset of jaws in the throat,
like in the inside of
the or just
entrance
be mushed.
Of the throat. Yeah.
So that woman had a really, really horrible time.
Wasn't she tossed back and forth between some pterodactyls before?
She was really beaten up.
That was more terrifying than her being eaten. I thought. I mean, that was the first really disturbing thing I've ever seen in those movies. I thought.
At that point, she was probably just ready to be ground up. Like, please kill me now.
Put me in the back throat, Jaws, now! Just get it over with! All right. I think we've probably milked that for all we can, right? And we should make mention, though, like Jake said, mentioned before the show about Margot Kidder passing away today, or yesterday, rather. See, I did the same thing. At 69, was she?
Yeah. Which is not crazy old.
No.
And having just happened, there's no cause of death that's been released as of yet, so it's hard to say, but, I mean, she was one of the first. I don't know if there were old Superman serials that had Lois Lane portrayals in them. Maybe there were.
Yeah, the old black and white with, what's his name, Doherty. My last name he had.
What?
Yeah, he did.
There was a Superman with the last name Doherty?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah, the original Superman black and white TV show. His last name was
Before Doherty. George Reeves?
Actually, that's what I was thinking of, George Reeves. I don't know why I threw my name in there. That's the one.
You obviously identify so strongly with Superman. That's what it is.
People get me mixed up all the time.
Well, but, you know, there was like old Batman serials, so I imagine there had to have been some Superman of the same.
The George Reeves one is what the one I'm thinking about, of. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure they did have one.
I forget what we were talking about now.
Lois
Lane, thank you. But yeah, I think that was probably the... Did they have Lois Lane in that old show?
Pretty sure.
Did they? I never seen it.
Yeah, because they even had Jimmy, too, so...
I just remember Don in like our very first episode of this show telling us about when he stopped in on I Love Lucy and asked to wrestle the children or something.
Yeah. Who wants to wrestle?
Yeah.
That's right.
Quite disturbing. But...
Let's switch gears.
Back to a more somber,
in solemn remembrance.
Sad moment here to remember Margot Robbie. I have nothing to say.
Margot Kidder.
Not Margot Robbie.
Margot Robbie. See, that's how much of a fan I was.
I'm glad she's not gone.
Yeah.
I just knew her as Lois Lane.
Right, me too.
Yeah. All I've ever been told is that she was... Maybe I shouldn't say that, but... She had some psychological issues that were...
I think I heard that too.
And at times dangerous.
Yeah. I think like she had been, someone reported her like squatting in their backyard or something. Yeah, I don't remember exactly what the details were, but.
Oh, that's sad.
These don't seem like the best things to be talking about.
No.
In this moment.
Wow. This
she was
went
a
off the rails.
Lady.
Yeah.
That's about as sentimental as Candair gets, I think, though, sometimes. We try our best. We really do. But it doesn't always come out the way we want. So. Thank you for your portrayal of Lois Lane. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Those are great movies.
Yeah.
Great, great movies. And you will be sorely missed.
You know what? Any death before 70 just seems
Wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
Too soon.
I hear John like checking out right now. Like, these guys are assholes.
Where am I? He's
like, well, you're not wrong. All right. Well, with that, let's just swing open the door to the comic vault. Who would like to go first this week?
I'll go with mine. My strange name that you'll never guess what it's about. So mine is called Legacy Control. It's at legacy-control.com.
Wait, first, should I tell you what I think it is?
Go for it.
Computers.
No.
Okay.
He doesn't have his last name, but his first name is Javis, kind of like Jarvis minus the R.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a like a Sunday Funnies type comic strip deal. Okay. Where he takes interactions between him and his wife and put it into cartoon mode. Pretty funny.
I like that.
Pretty ballsy. I know I would get in trouble if any of the stuff that I put on.
My wife has big feet and talks too much.
Yeah. But I got one here that was pretty funny. He's got, remember the show, it was kind of like Married with Children, except it was different.
Yes, Nikki Cox. Yes. Unhappily Ever After.
Yeah, remember the rabbit that he had that he sat and talked? Well, yes. This guy's got his own rendition of that. And he's sitting there talking to his rabbit, and the rabbit says, "Popping bubble wrap is one of the most satisfying feelings." And he says, "Yep." Or when someone lets you peel the sunburn, or when someone lets you peel their sunburned flesh. And the rabbit just looks at him kind of like, okay. And then he says, "Or masturbating without crying."
Oh. I think you've said that kind of thing before.
There are a lot of not safe for work funnies in there.
Yeah.
Best.
Yeah.
Make sure you're working at work and not reading comics, these comics at work.
Yeah. And the artwork's pretty good. The only part that I have trouble is looking at his nipples, because they look like actual babies'
oh,
nipples.
God.
Oh. Oh, sick.
It's kind of jarring.
Like baby bottle nipples.
Baby yeah. bottle nipples, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I'm glad
they're so. They're. Oh,
that's going to be the first thing I think of now when I like feed my nephew. I'm like, oh god.
But yep, Legacy Control.
Very cool. Very cool.
Nice.
Where was that? That was a webcomic, you said.
Yes.
What was the website? Did you say
legacy-control.com.
Control.com.
He updates Mondays, Wednesdays, and Friday.
He's in Cincy.
Yep.
Nice. Very cool. All right, John. Did you have a book you'd like to talk about?
I've always got lots of books I'd like to talk about, but I can narrow it down, I guess, to one that I've been rereading quite a lot recently, The Dregs, by Zach Thompson, Lonnie Nadler, and Eric Zawadzki. It's on Black Mask, so it came out. It's from last year. It was a 4-issue miniseries, and it's about set in Vancouver. So. Kind of, you know, like, which is where I live, so it's kind of interesting to see it rendered there. But it's kind of about a homeless man who kind of goes on this kind of noir investigation, and there's like it's cannibalism is kind of like the background where all of the homeless people in the city are being sort of ground up and eaten by the rich. So it's kind of like a really, really interesting kind of mix of like stories, elements, and styles, and like the art is just fantastic. So I think there's a trade paperback version out now, and it's worth checking out.
Is that a newer or older story?
It's from last year, so it's relatively new.
It's relatively new. I remember a Treehouse of Horror on The Simpsons years ago, where the cafeteria had run out of, or the school ran out of money, and they couldn't. Buy right. food.
Yeah.
One, they yeah. started grinding kids up one at a time and feeding them.
Yeah, yeah.
That was funny, but that sounds like an awesome.
Sounds
book.
So cool.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. What was it? The Dregs, you said.
Yeah, The Dregs, yeah.
Very good, very good.
May I take a moment talking about that Treehouse of Horrors thing? Mm-hmm. I had to stop watching The Simpsons when I was younger because that episode gave me nightmares and it just fucked me up for a long time.
Really?
To this day, I have the distinct memory of, I think, Milhouse slipping off the edge of something and being visibly
yes.
pureed in the blender. But I went back and I watched that episode, and you don't see it happen.
You see, like, the camera is, like, where the blade is, and you see him fall at it, and then, like, a spray of blood, and then that's it.
But I remember it happening. I can see it in my head, his limbs being removed from one another. I don't know if it was a nightmare I had that invaded my memories and now my brain can't tell the difference.
How old were you?
I was 7.
Okay.
It's like that Bernstein Bears thing.
Yeah.
It's,
Mandela effect.
Yeah. I could swear, until I watched the episode, I'd have sworn on anything that I remember that precise moment. And
wow.
Yeah.
All those Treehouse of Horrors, some of them were pretty...
They're pretty fucked up.
Pretty messed up, yeah.
Yeah. I enjoyed them. Wow, I never had that kind of, like... I never watched one, though, and was like, whoa, wow, I can't believe they did that. That's too far. But I guess I didn't watch them much when I was younger.
No, I had to stop, because there was that, and then I had a dream, and I shit you not, I wish I could make this up. This is God's honest truth. I had a dream that Flanders murdered my father with an axe.
Wow.
Wow. Of all the characters.
I know. That's the thing. In retrospect,
it's the ones
I was like,
you don't expect.
Right.
That didn't make any sense. But to a child's mind, I guess it made as much sense as anything else.
Oh, yeah, man. I love the conversation this comic called The Dregs has spawned. This is amazing.
It's like a therapy session now. Seriously.
What was that, John?
It's like a therapy session now. We walk
Just let it all
out. Very good. I'm going to have to look into that. Okay, the book I have this week is...
The Human Fly.
The Human Fly! Again, no, but not too far off. I have been going back to the well that I have tapped for webcomics, which is Hiveworks. I've talked about Hiveworks on the show quite a bit within the past month or two, I think. Because it's just, they've got so many good webcomics.
With that much selection, it's hard to...
You can't go wrong. I haven't found one I dislike yet.
Yeah.
And the one I found this week is called Spinneret. And it's about this girl named Heather Brown, and she plays, or she is, the lab assistant at with a scientist who studies in arachnid DNA. Ooh. The setup sounded all familiar,
it's,
people.
It's vague. I don't know what it's conjuring.
Right.
Off of.
But, and as the second you start going, wait a minute, this sounds like Spider-Man, she addresses it in the comic. Like, well, what would happen, sir, if I did this and this and that? And he goes, well, you're not going to get powers like Spider-Man, you know? So it immediately kind of meets you at the punch. Right. You know?
Yeah.
But she's a klutz, and she stumbles into the ray of this big gun, and it transforms her for sure. But she sprouts 4 extra arms. So she has 6 arms, you know, or 2 legs.
A
little harder to hide, which she ends up doing with a trench coat. But she's ecstatic. She loves the fact that she has these arms, and she's like, I'm going to be a superhero. And her roommate's like, we got to get to the doctor. The fuck happened to you? You just sprouted, you know, shit out the side of your...
Tie them off and let them die.
But she's like, no, I'm hellbent. I'm going to be a superhero. I've got these powers. So she says I'm going to call myself, Spider-Woman or something like that. And they're like, already been taken, obviously. Yeah. I mean, you know, you see what you're doing. And she goes and buys a Venom costume, buys extra sleeves and a bunch of white gloves and boots. And she ends up looking like the Venomized version of Spider-Woman from the actual comics. But then it's told, you know, you can't call yourself that. You can't wear this. And I never read far enough to where she changed her outfit. But on the cover of the, the website, or maybe even the cover of that issue, you see her in a more upgraded, more personalized outfit. But you see her then on the roof of a building, like trying to shoot webs out of all 6 of her hands. She's like, come on, you know, Tobey Maguire was able to do this. And the harder she tries, all of a sudden, she shoots a web. Just not out of her hands.
Oh.
Not where I think it is.
Yep, it's right where you think it is. Right out her ass comes the web.
That makes a lot more biological sense.
Yeah. She's like, how am I going to be a hero if I have to sling webs with my ass? But she's determined, and she does. She jumps, slings a web out her ass, catches herself, and hits a wall. She's like, oh, that hurt, but it's okay. Tobey Maguire did the same thing.
You gotta learn.
Spider-Man did the same thing. It's okay. So then she actually finds a mugger. She's patrolling one night and finds a mugger, her very first villain, or adversary. Mm-hmm. She gets down there and says, stop, you know, in the name of justice or whatever. And this mugger just turns around and just goes ape shit on her, just starts beating the ever-living crap out of her. And that issue ends with her calling her roommate crying, "Can you come pick me up? I think we need to go to the doctor," you know. So,
oh, geez.
I loved it. It was fun. We had a comic. I don't remember who it was. I think it was Super Corporate Heroes by Miguel Guerra and Susie Diaz that maybe featured a person who shot some kind of string out of his ass.
That sounds familiar.
But, yeah, this was a great book. Check it out. Good art. It kind of reminded me of Tina Fine's Off-Girl art a little bit.
Ooh.
It's not maybe not quite as polished, but that's not to say it doesn't look damn good.
Sure.
It's a good book. It was a fun read. Strongly recommend it. It's on Hiveworks.com, or you can go to Spinnyverse.com. Check it out.
Awesome.
And I think that's everybody, right?
Yep.
So with that, let's turn our attention over to John Ward and talk first about Scratcher. John, thanks again for being with us here today.
Yeah, thank you very much.
And this comic, from the moment you sent that first email, was very intriguing. Tattoos that possess their owner. And after looking at the comic, it looks like there's somewhat of like a zombie twist to this too, right?
Yeah, we're just trying to make it visual, you know, because, you know, it's a comic, so, you know, we can't really do a lot with the tattoos. Juan Romero is the artist, and he does a great job kind of making that kind of panel by panel kind of transition, so you kind of feel that there's movement, but it's, you know, it's I think it kind of just works better for us to kind of like play up that kind of that more ravenous kind of zombie element.
Sure. It looked like there was a scene in the book where he was looking up and you could see the tattoo like starting to creep up his neck or something. It looked really freaking awesome.
Yeah.
But I always feel kind of nervous telling the listeners about the book because I don't want to give away any spoilers or anything. So if you would you mind telling the listeners a little bit about the story?
I think that's pretty much it. It's a tattoo artist who... discovers tattoo artist who discovers that her clients are basically being possessed by the tattoo she's given them. So she goes after them to try and do something about it, although she's not really sure what she's going to do about it. So that's kind of what it is in a nutshell. It's just kind of a small I wanted to tell like a horror story that was kind of like horrific, like visually, but also kind of just sort of on that small scale about, you know, a person kind of at a transition in their life. You know, they're kind of not really sure where they're going, and they're kind of afraid that they're going to be stuck in the dead end job forever, kind of thing. And they're looking for a purpose, and so that's kind of where the idea sort of came from, and that's kind of really what sort of propels part of the story going forward.
Well, it's an awesome idea, and I just absolutely love it. But I mean, how did you come up with this concept? What inspired this?
I kind of, it's been kicking around in my head actually for a long time since I was a kid and I was still living in England. You know, we went through a period in England where like everybody was getting tattoos. Typically, they were, you know, exactly the same tattoos, you know, like Celtic bands or, you know, barbed wire around the arms and stuff. And I had a lot of friends who were tattoo artists, and, you know, they were amazingly sort of gifted artists, but they were basically stuck in positions where they're just tattooing crappy tattoos on people. And it just struck me as being odd that people were kind of claiming their individuality by doing exactly the same thing that everybody else around them was doing. Everyone had
right.
tattoos, and I was kind of just thinking it's kind of a weird sort of thing to see. And then I was just, you know, idly sort of thinking about, well, you know, how do you turn that against people, kind of like their individuality, kind of what if there's kind of like a consciousness that's kind of controlling them, kind of thing. So it kind of was sort of festering for quite some time before I actually sort of got it to sort of this version of the story. But yeah, that's kind of where it came from. So yeah, just kind of seeing what was happening in the UK at that time.
I've seen different things with tattoos before. Like, wasn't it like in Hannibal? What was the prequel to Hannibal? Like Red Dragon.
Red Dragon. Yeah.
Wasn't there something to do with his tattoo? Like,
it was
in his
representative
beliefs?
Of his weird complex he had.
Like what he was trying to have possess him or something.
He's trying to metamorphose in some way. He thought he was becoming something. You know,
right.
Something.
Hmm. It's a great concept. I just love what you've done with it best. It's awesome.
I tell you what, if people were in danger of being possessed by the spirit of their tattoos, we'd have millions of women in this country floating around on butterfly wings.
from their ass.
Yeah. Little dinky angel wings that can't carry them.
I remember, you might remember, late 90s, early 2000s, the thing for all the misunderstood teenagers was to get the barcode on the back of your neck.
Yeah. I always wanted that because I thought I made that up, but because I always wanted to get something like that. I'm glad I never did because...
Oh, yeah.
It's probably better that way.
It was everywhere. And I knew some people that had it. And I would think now, I mean, I've got some tattoos, and I've had the one now for about 12 years, and it's parts of it are bleeding together. So a box with all these little lines close to each other is just going to come out looking like a black box not that long a time. But
and then you want to make a statement about your individuality by turning yourself into a serial... I don't know. It just seems misguided.
Be at the grocery store, watch this. Beep.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. It says this item is worthless.
Oh, my God.
You laugh because I'm different.
Oh, yeah. If I had that tattoo, I would be so scanning myself at the grocery store.
Oh, asparagus. I would at least be sure you're something cool.
Right. Oh, I certainly wouldn't be.
Jack Daniels.
Oh, that'd be tight.
I'd be like broccoli or
box
something.
Box of tampons.
Nothing. Yeah, that's what I would be. That's what I would be.
K-Y-Douche.
I was actually thinking that earlier. I was like, but if you're going to say it, I'm going to latch right on.
It's been said.
Now, I saw that you can get this comic at arbutusfilms.com. Also on Comixology. Is there anywhere else we ought to be sending people to check out Scratcher?
No, that's it right now. It's just Comixology is probably the best bet.
Okay. Now, I also had noticed on your website and in your email, you had also said you're a television writer? Is that correct?
Yeah, that's what I'm doing up here.
Do you mind asking at all what you write? I'm very curious.
I'm sort of cornering the market in like highly unsuccessful TV pitches right now. So that's... So that's kind of I mostly write crime or sci-fi or sci-fi crime or some other mix of those two genres. Yeah, crime fight. Yeah, that's pretty much what I've been pitching.
You really couldn't be writing crime at a better time. I mean, like crime and murder mystery kind of stuff pinnacle.
This is
of
the
popularity.
Golden age of people's interest in that kind
for
of
sure,
thing.
For sure.
Yeah, it is.
Also said you're a podcaster. You are a fellow podcaster?
I host a podcast here where I basically interview more successful Canadian writers to sort of figure out what their secret is and why I'm failing. There's a lot of great podcasts out there and there's just not a lot of Canadian podcasts, so I just wanted to do something that was kind of a little bit, a little bit different and kind of focusing on sort of our more local creators. So I've been, speaking with TV writers, film writers, and started moving into doing like producers and directors. Just chatting a lot about sort of the process of like how they approach storytelling and then sort of, trying to figure out, what are the failures that kind of they've had that kind of lead to success. Because it's kind of weird that we celebrate success so often, but we don't really talk about failure. And I think, we learn a lot more by failing, than we do by through success. So,
absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
So that's kind of really what my podcast is about. It's about writing and failing. That's what I've been doing for the past year. So I think I've got like about 25 episodes done that are up. So you can get those on my website and like iTunes or wherever you want to get them from.
What's the name of the show?
I was trying to be clever and I ended up with like a really kind of like dubiously terrible title. It's called the 49 Degrees North Writers Podcast. So it doesn't really stick in the memory that well, but
I like it.
I was just, just want to think of something that sort of spoke to it, the Canadiana of it.
Right.
Let this day be the first of a grand alliance between a Canadian and American podcasts.
Hey, I am down.
Yeah. To develop the great North American podcasting network. Respecting no borders between our two countries.
If I had the capabilities, boy, I certainly would. I'd love to do something like that. It'd be cool.
Yeah.
Well, I cannot wait to check your show out. It sounds like it's a lot of fun. And I mean, those are the kind of shows that I think people gravitate toward because, like you're saying, you know, we're talking about our failures and that's where the lesson typically comes from. And people, yeah. There are so many people who go to podcasts for how to, you know.
Sure.
So that's a great idea. I can't wait to listen to it.
Yeah.
All right. Is there anything else, John, that you seem like a man of many talents? Anything under your belt we should be talking about?
I don't know if a man of many talents, like some talents, maybe. I'm always kind of working on different things. So I think Scratcher right now is kind of like taking up a lot of my creative energy. So that's kind of the main thing. I've got a few other projects and some anthology work that's going to be coming out later this year, hopefully. And then hopefully TV at some point.
Sure. Well, we're going to be rooting for you, and everyone should go to arbitusfilms.com and over to Comixology to check out Scratcher and just everything John is about. John, I want to thank you so much for being on the show with us today. It's been a hell of a lot of fun, man.
Yeah, it's been great. Thank you for having me.
Jack, what do we have on the website?
Go to candairpodcast.com where you can see show highlights, guest info, listen to the show, follow us on all our social media, click our merch page, our merch button to get some merch. Check out our special guest page. Check out our YouTube page. And if you'd like to be a guest and promote your work, send us an email on our contacts page.
And don't forget, that is at CannedAirPod on Twitter and at Canned_Air on Instagram. _. And Patreon. Do it. Support us and we will provide you with quality entertainment. That's a guarantee.
And I think we might as well just say, I mean, we're going to start having the Wizard World promo codes commercials coming back. We're getting that all worked out. So your boys here at Canned Air are going to be getting you a little bit of a discount in your Wizard World tickets. Every little bit
something
helps.
Something we love to do.
Mm-hmm. Especially at a convention, every little bit helps because they can be pricey. So why not get some money off?
Indeed.
Compliments of your boys over at Canned Air, right?
Yep.
And lady. Sorry. But is there anything else, gentlemen?
We got to tell them how to get that discount.
Well, once we get that code.
Well, that's where you're going to.
Well, I don't want to tell them yet until it's worked out. But I guess we can. It's the same as it's always been. Just Canned Air, lowercase, no space, right?
Mm-hmm.
There it is.
And I would like to leave us on this note. Mm-hmm. I believe it was Ben Franklin who once said, you need to either do something worth writing about or write something worth reading. If you can't do either of those things, start a podcast called Candor.
And on that note, I am Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
I'm Jake Runyon.
I'm Abby Potter.
I'm John Moore.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
From outside.
Blowtorch!
Whenever there's a fire in your house, be sure to get outside immediately. And once outside, get on CannedAirPodcast.com.
Well, thanks for the tip, Blowtorch, but just one question. What about the fire?
And no one is half the battle.
G.I. Joe!
Is that good?
Yeah. Yeah, no, that was good.
How is that
I
a newer,
down.
Older yeah. story?
Yeah. Sorry?
Well, hey, podcast listener. My name is Vince, and I'm the host of a show called The RR Show. It stands for Reddit Readings. We're going to sit down twice a week, and I'm going to bring you the most entertaining stories from all of the best subreddits that exist online. Things like malicious compliance, petty revenge, hey, lady, I don't work here. Oh, there's so much more. Lots of great stories and things you won't believe. Like the one time this dude was caught in a bathroom with his friend and he was slapping them because that was the only way that he could actually legitimately help them. A mall cop comes in with a taser. Oh, yeah. The rest is history. It's going to be fun. There is I don't know, I got like 20 seconds left, so I don't got much more time to tell you another story. But just join me on The RR Show. It's from Evergreen Podcast, produced in partnership with Wessler Media. So The RR Show, wherever you get podcasts, subscribe today. And it's like an adult story time. Let's hang out together. The RR Show. Subscribe today wherever you get your podcasts.